Welcome to the Business Vitality Podcast. My name is Catherine Canty. I am the host and an executive coach. I work with teams, individuals, and leaders to help create measured leadership change. We do that using practical application, and our clients are creating 100% measured results as seen by those around them. Not necessarily what I think or what they think, but what the other people are seeing. And they are being recognized for the hard work that they're doing. If you're interested in learning more about some of the work that we're doing, you can learn more at CatherineCanty.com. I would love for you to subscribe to this show, to Business Vitality. This is my way to continue to pay it forward and share business best practices. Stay tuned and listen to the interview. Thanks for being here.
Damon Limby, you are the CEO of Learnit, found on the web at learnit.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
Catherine, it's an honor to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate it. Tell me a little bit about you and how you found Learnit, and or actually, let's back that up. Tell me about Learnit, just so people kind of understand the business that you're in and all the different expertise that you bring to the table.
Great. So Learnit is a B2B live learning platform, and our customers turn to us when they're promoting individuals from an individual contributor to a first-time manager role, which takes a completely different skill set. And so we help ramp them up in those new skills that they need. So that's one area we focus on. Another one is a lot of times organizations do these pulse checks to see how their employees are doing. And people come back saying, look, we're not getting enough professional growth opportunities. And so we design learning programs that help them recruit, hire, and retain great talent. And also, a lot of our customers are working in silos and they're having communication breakdowns and they're frustrated with that. So again, we build live learning programs that help, that are tailored and help them overcome those challenges or maybe help them look towards whatever business goals they have.
Perfect. That's okay. I've got a couple questions, but first, how in the world did you and Learnit come together? So now you're CEO of this great organization. How did that come about?
I mean, that's a question I kind of ask myself a lot. How in the world? At the time of this recording, you know, we're a week away from our 30th anniversary. And as I was explaining before we came on air, I grew up thinking I was going to be a baseball player. That's all I cared about. And I went all in as a senior in high school. I was a high school All-American. And I got this opportunity to either, I got drafted by the Atlanta Braves, but I turned that down to go to college, first at Pepperdine University. And it was really my first great leadership lesson. I chose Pepperdine. I had this Hall of Fame baseball coach who I'm still in touch with, Annie Lopez. And he had this moonshot goal. Pepperdine's this 2,500 person school. And he's like, we're going to win the College World Series in a couple of years. And people are like, well, I mean, that's kind of tough coming up against these large schools like South Carolina or even, you know, Arizona State. Long story short, I went to Pepperdine, dealt with a little imposter syndrome, ended up leaving Pepperdine, had to bounce around to a junior college, got another opportunity to go to Arizona State, went for it, had a great career there, looking to get drafted again, didn't happen. Here I am, 22 years old, had a complete identity crisis because I looked at myself as just a baseball player, didn't think my skills were transferable. I was really fortunate that I came from a big real estate family in the San Francisco Bay Area, mostly around apartment buildings and hotels. But I was too intimidated to go work there. Again, this was 1995. But my dad, like a lot of entrepreneurs, was trying to figure out how to solve a challenge that he found was he's trying to digitize his portfolio, went and took a computer class somewhere, hated it, and started Learnit with the idea that he wanted to make it short, cheap, quick. Anybody can take classes. I started there as a receptionist in June of 95, probably answered more phone calls than anybody else. Fast forward 5 years from doing sales and teaching classes, when that CEO wasn't working out, I threw my hat in the ring. I became CEO of Learnit right when the dot-com days started, which was a very interesting time. Went through the dot-com bust, survived that, learned a great deal. And here I am, 25 years, 30 years later, at Learnit, and never in my life did I think that I would be involved in learning. I wasn't the best student in the world. I didn't really put that much attention into learning in college, but it's been a career that I really enjoy. So I'm really grateful for it.
Can I just ask some questions based off of that?
Whatever you want.
Okay. Tell me about, because what I'm seeing is through life, we have different phases in life, and we have, I would say, if we're growing and we're learning, in my opinion, I'm not the same person I used to be. And I certainly don't want to be this person in a few more years. Now I'm doing the best I can where I am, but I want to keep growing. And so with that, I think comes this identity crisis of who was I and who am I becoming? So how do you manage that identity crisis that you said that you felt like you went through? I think people are always looking for ideas on that.
Absolutely. And I'm a lot like you. I'm definitely not the same person I was 25, 30 years ago, maybe not even 10 years ago. Now that I became a parent in the last 7 or 10 years, you know, my priorities have really changed. I think when it comes down to identity, I thought my identity was a baseball player. Everywhere I'd go, people would ask me questions about baseball. And when that came to an end, it was very, very difficult. I'd go to a San Francisco Giants game and see my best friend that year, Jacob Cruz, hit a home run for the Giants, which was literally my dream. Mm-hmm. But what I realized is that I really believed that I could be great at something. I didn't know what it was. And I wanted to give back even to my parents, you know, for the great childhood that they were able to provide me and my three siblings. And so I kind of went all in at Learn It then. And what I found out really early, and I think this is important for your listeners who maybe got let go and they want to pivot careers or whatever, the skills that you learn in your previous career are transferable to your next career. They really are, whether it's sales, whether it's communication, whether it's perseverance. And the other thing is, I found, at least for me, my identity isn't CEO of Learn It or a baseball player. It's a person who I believe is humble, has integrity, and a continuous learner. So in whatever phase I go through for my life, you know, those are kind of the values, and there's a couple more, I guess, but I look at it that way. So you have these different phases of your life and career, but at the end of the day, I think you should have a foundation of who you are, and that adapts and changes over time.
Are there ways to kind of reevaluate that? These core things that we are, do you reevaluate that on a regular basis? And do you see it transitioning, or do you have words of wisdom of people that are kind of at a crossroads and saying, you know, I'm not quite that anymore, but I want to reevaluate. I want to do an audit, or to use your words from earlier, I want to do a pulse check.
Well, I think that's ironic because I just released a solo episode about I call it a 3x3 audit of my leadership style. And I look at twice a year just to myself. I reflect back on what am I doing well? What am I consistent at? Or excuse me, what am I getting better at? Number one. Number two is what am I consistent at? And number three, most important, where do I need to grow and evolve and change? And I kind of reflect back. And that's one way to do it, is to, from your own perspective. But at the end of the day, I think what's most important is to be great at receiving feedback. There's a lot of talk about how do you give feedback to people, but if you're able to receive feedback in a way where you're not getting defensive and you're inviting it, especially from your, like I got, I don't know, 60, 70 employees. Just yesterday, I sent a video to a raw footage of a solo that was coming out to one of my top instructors. I said, just give me your honest to God feedback. And she gave me some pretty critical feedback. And she's like, I hope you don't think I'm nitpicking too much. But I responded back and I said, thank you. I could really learn and grow from this. And she's like, you know what? That felt so nice to hear you say that. It made my day. So I think you got to get feedback from people, because I think feedback is the fuel for growth. And so there's just different ways to doing that. And I think it comes down to, as well as being open, you know, having more of a learn-it-all mentality than a know-it-all, like I've got it all figured out. And especially as you grow and get really successful, so to speak, a lot of times you think like, oh, I hit the pinnacle. I don't need to learn and grow anymore. But as you and I know, that's not the case. You always have to continue to evolve if you want to stay ahead.
There's a lot of meat in that answer. I like it. We could totally like dissect so many things. But I'm I'm curious about, you said you survived the bust, the tech bust back in the day, and not everybody survived. And I feel like some of the same lessons that were happening then and even before then, they just keep popping back up because maybe I wasn't listening the first time or whatever it may be. And I just feel like history continues to repeat itself. So what are maybe two or three things you learned from that tech bust since you survived and was able to get to the other side? Not everybody did. I'm very curious.
That's a great question. And in complete honesty, if it wasn't for my family support during that time, I wouldn't have survived it, because as a 26, 27 year old CEO who thought he kind of knew it all, had all the answers, and especially comparing myself to my friends who are all paper millionaires with these dot-com businesses, I pushed my board and my dad and everybody to expand, to overexpand, which we did. And my dad, who unfortunately passed away 10, 15 years ago, but he would say I had one of the most expensive MBAs he's ever seen. but it was a good MBA because I learned, because exactly like what you said, in 2009, when we had the Great Recession, I caught it much earlier. I didn't have, my family business went through their own major challenges on real estate in 2009. So I didn't have the same backing. So I took the learnings that I had from before, which we saw it coming. And the first thing I did that I didn't do before is I got together our leadership team and, you know, my mentors and outside advisors. And we talked about how do we head this, you know, straight on. And the first thing we did was we realized we had to make cuts. We had to make a 25% cut in our team. And instead of doing it, you know, piecemeal where you just ruined everybody, we had a, you know, everybody's morale. I sat down and I individually let go probably 15 to 20 people that day, one after the other, turned around, was very transparent with our team. And I said, I'm confident we put us in a position to be successful over the next 12 months. I don't foresee any more cuts, but I need everybody to take a pay cut. And I'm going to take a 3x size pay cut. And I need everybody to come together. And we all need to work together through this. And we ended up having a great year that year. We survived that. So that was one major learning. The other major learning is when you make big decisions like I did of overexpanding, I coined a phrase in my book, The Learn It All Leader, called purposeful awfulizing. What I didn't do was, what is the worst case scenario? So fast forward a year and a half, if things didn't work out, or even a year, could learn it survive it, or would we bankrupt? Well, I didn't think about that. And so I just went through and made that bad decision. And now whenever there's a large, very important decision, I think about what's the worst case scenario instead of rose-colored glasses all the time. Mm-hmm. And if you can't survive that decision, then you got to go back to the drawing board and figure out something else. The third big decision I learned how to do was around sunken cost fallacy. Sometimes, you know, I wanted to hold on to things that we did in the dot-com days, and I held on to them too long. And sometimes you just can't throw good money after bad. You have to figure it out. So there's so many learning lessons and opportunities. And I think if my dad was here, he would say that I've earned my most expensive real world MBA.
Yeah, I don't have a college MBA, but I have lived.
Neither do I. Yeah.
It is just like full blown. This is what we're going to learn. And that was way more expensive. Yeah. Especially I'm married to a serial entrepreneur. So like, I just see a lot that case studies can't even put you through because you're living in it. And that last question, I have learned to ask that question a lot, is when is it going to be the end? When is enough enough? And as I start things, I hear my questions that I used to give to him are coming back to me, and I'm like, oh, that kind of stings a little bit. You're right. Like, we're going to try things, and when's enough enough before we need to just acknowledge that was good, we learned, and we're going to have to pivot and try something else. So yeah, you said something about paper millionaires. I think there's plenty of paper millionaires out there today. What are your thoughts on I guess, you know, there's just this AI image, all of it, like there are these images of all this, you know, abundance that isn't always, I don't think, always real. So we had the paper millionaires back in the dot-com era. What about now? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are, first and foremost, another thing I learned is stop comparing yourself to people. I was too worried about my friends or these other people and so-called success they were having. And by the way, when everything fell apart and they couldn't pay for their car leases and their houses and everything, you know, they got over their skis, so to speak. I we're seeing a lot of the same kind of stuff, especially out here in San Francisco. This is the Mecca for AI. And part of it's really, really exciting. Outside of LearnIt, I've got a real estate portfolio that consists of commercial real estate as well, which is not doing too well right now. But AI might help bring it back with some of those organizations, you know, those small startups. I'm a big believer in that AI is going to be, transformative, and at the end of the day, net out positive. And so maybe some of those paper millionaires will really turn into millionaires. But the people who talk about it, Catherine, at the end of the day, like my dad always said, sometimes they're the phonies, you know. So why talk about it? Just go out, go about your business, do your work, stop worrying about what other people have to say. And the loudmouths who are telling you how much they have in their abundance, let's see how they turn out.
Yeah. No.
Can't worry about other people. That's just the way I look at it. I mean, that's something that I just, like we talked about, you grow and you get different over time, and just focus on the great stuff that you have and, you know, what you have coming your way.
I love it. All right. So in the beginning, you talked about you're helping individual contributors turn into managers. You're helping, and really there's not enough that we can do, I think, to help these managers, because it is a total mind shift to move that. What are maybe a couple of ideas going from individual contributor to manager that could be helpful for somebody that's listening or somebody that's managing and promoting this person from individual contributor into manager?
First and foremost, and I'm sure you see this all the time, so I'm curious to see what you have to say, is make sure that they should be promoted into a management role. One of the biggest mistakes that I see on both sides with our clients and even some of the people that I just kind of mentor on the side, especially in sales, is you take your top producing salesperson and you throw them into a leadership role, and they completely bomb because it's, you know, they're used to winning directly, you know, doing their own work, getting their own thing done. And as a new manager or a new leader, you have to win through your team. You know, you're no longer the hero. You're more of a hero maker. So be very clear on that. And also get out of the outdated thinking of that's the only career path that people have. So first and foremost, understand why would somebody want to move into a leadership role? You know, is it because they enjoy coaching? Have they ever coached somebody on a sports team before? You know, do they have the potential to grow into those skills? And if you're an individual contributor and you move into a new manager role, one of the things that we see happen quite a bit is they want to prove themselves right away. Maybe they have a little imposter syndrome themselves. They're like, well, I don't even know if people will think I belong here. Well, first of all, you do belong there because you got put into that role. So it's not your responsibility to prove that you belong there anymore. It's your responsibility to go in and do the best job you can. And one of the big mistakes they make is they want to make changes right away. They go in and they want to make changes right away to prove that they know everything. My recommendation is take 90 days. Don't do nothing, but get curious, listen, figure out what's going well, what's not going well. What are some of the changes that your team that's reporting to you would like to see happen? Because when you go and you try to make those changes, if you have the connection with your employees, your team, it's going to be much easier to have those come to fruition and work. So be curious, learn, and go for it afterwards. Now, the other thing, and this is, and I'm sure you've experienced this with your husband as a serial entrepreneur, as a leader, that journey is never linear. You're going to have a lot of bumps in the road. You're going to make a lot of mistakes. I always say, I look back over the past 3 years and even over all my career, and you're always saying, like, why did I do things that way? You know, so be really understanding of that. Don't beat yourself up too much. You will make mistakes. Learn from those mistakes so you can make different mistakes. The other thing I'd say, and I'm not just saying this because I run LearnIt, if you get put into a new leadership role, a new manager role, you need to demand that your organization invests in you, you know, because so many times people get thrown into a new management position and they just assume that you have the skills and ability to do it. Not mm-hmm. the case, but you got to own up and take it upon yourself to get yourself that training or that coaching or that mentoring. You can't just sit back and wait for it. I always recommend to these people I mentor, make that part of the deal going into taking that role. Say, you know, do we have an agreement that you'll commit to sending me through a new leader program or getting me a coach or doing something? Set yourself up proactively for success.
I think that's smart to negotiate it on the front end. I think people are so tied into the title change, the perception that they're going up this corporate ladder, which you're right. It doesn't, it's not an upward ladder anymore. It's kind of a jungle gym situation now. And ask on the front end what you need. And it's not just, I need a title and a paycheck. I need support, because I tell my folks over and over again, it's like, nobody was born with this knowledge. Why do we all think that we're just supposed to roll into this new position and it was somehow given to us at birth on how to manage personalities? This, I think, the hardest job out there is to manage people.
It's very hard. I have this good friend who is an incredible salesperson, and he became a manager after I told him he shouldn't do it, just knowing his personality. And he contacted me 6 months after doing it. And he's like, I can't stand managing people. They're calling me on the weekends. You know, yeah. They're calling me around the clock. I just want to go back to being a salesperson. And I think what's really important for you CEOs and your business owners out there listening, think about the ripple effect this has. This guy, he has too much pride to go back to his boss. In this mm-hmm. case, it's the CEO of a 1,000-person company who's on really good terms with. He's considering leaving because he doesn't want to do this role anymore. And I could only imagine that the 12 people who report to him are probably not happy as well. So it's a typical situation. And by the way, he's never gone through any kind of leadership program, even if I would give it to him for free. He just feels like he doesn't have the time. So, I mean, there's just so many great case studies right in that situation of how things could be done differently.
Yes, I totally agree. And yes, I'm working with someone and they were managing a team. Mm-hmm. And so it's reversing. They're managing a team and now they're an independent contributor. But I've been around long enough to realize that doesn't really mean anything. It just means you get a little bit of a pause for a second, because that means, I think, they're about to dump even more stuff on you. They're just unraveling something to re-ravel something for you later. And so it's so funny to listen to some of these calls, you know, the stories they tell themselves yeah. of even going in the reverse pattern. I'm not managing people. Now I'm going to independent contributor. And I've been on both sides and I'm thinking to myself, I'd take independent contributor all day long just because I can just show up and I can do my job. And then because I've got that sales mindset and it's just easy to go, you know, create. And then it's just funny because then a couple calls later, the individual says, and now I've got this big company-wide project. It's huge. I'm like, exactly. Like, exactly. This is the cycle. Like, let's just not get stuck on a title, who we're managing, what we're doing. It's what you said earlier. Let's just focus on what we're doing, stop comparing with everybody else, and show up and do our best that we can do.
And that's all you can do. Show up and do yeah. the best you can do. And I think one of the great lessons that you just mentioned in there that a lot of leaders make is they have these top performing people, whether in a management role or not, and it's like the VIP curse. They just throw everything on that person. Mm-hmm. I was at my daughter's soccer game, and one of her friends is a project manager at a big biotech company, and she's really frustrated because she's got she pulled up her laptop and showed me she's got 13 projects, and her mm-hmm. you know, that her peer has 4, and it's because her peer isn't, you know, successful. I guess, whatever, they just keep throwing more work on her, and at the end of the day, she's probably going to leave, you know, or mm-hmm. or at least she's overwhelmed. I mean, that's in getting burnt out. So I think it's really important to be intentional and also be mindful as a leader to some degree, nurture and support your top performers. Give them the tools and resources they need to be successful and remove some of those barriers and don't throw too much on them.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about, you know, when we're in these high performing companies, high performing positions, burnout is something that's going to happen. How do we prevent that, in your opinion?
I think how we can prevent that, in my opinion, is, first and foremost, as a business leader, one thing I try to do on a regular basis when I have calls with my employees is start off and have a personal conversation. You know, how's it going? What's going on with your family? Is there anything outside of work that I should know about? And it helps. Sometimes we'll say, hey, I got sick kids or this or that, or whatever it is, right? So make them feel like they belong and that there's a purpose, even during all this burnout and overwhelm. And then from there, you gotta shift and have a mindset of flexibility. Maybe it's working hybrid. Maybe it's changing up the hours. Maybe it's doing whatever. Some people that I know, friends of mine, who are really used to the command and control type of leadership, they might think I'm too easy, but I don't, you know, honestly, I don't think I'm too easy. I think that what I do is I figure out the strengths that my people have, understand what's going on with them. We co-collaborate on ideas, and whatever it is, I let them figure out how they want to get it done, when they get it done, as long as they stay within the budget, they do it with integrity, and we hit our timelines. And so I just think it's a constant battle of what you're saying is just like being mindful of what's going on out there. And there's things outside of our control, you know, whether it's the uncertainty in the economy, whatever, you know. So there's certain things you can't control, and people are going to have these thoughts that go through their minds and things take place outside of work. But as a leader, take care of your people and do your best to be as transparent as possible about what's going on. And I think that will alleviate some of the, at least, mental stress that people have.
That is a legit stress, is that mental stress that, you know, we have a meeting, we think it's fine, but we didn't consider what the other person received during that meeting just to make sure they're mentally okay before they leave. Because sometimes we hear certain things and then we just climb a ladder and tell ourselves stories of things that aren't really true.
That's so true that, and if you're not being transparent with your people, they're making up these stories in their mind, you know, because they're coming to the worst case scenario. I remember we had a bad quarter, a year or so ago, and I kind of shared where we were at. I had this fractional CRO, chief revenue officer. And he's like, aren't you get a little concerned that if you overshare this type of information, people might think it's a sinking ship or things are not going well? I'm like, no, actually the opposite. You know, I mean, I'm being transparent, but with confidence. And kind of when you do that, people come up with ideas and they're like, at least they level set and like, hey, look, we know where we're at. And on top of it, I'll just say, look, we've been through 3 or 4 economic downturns. We always make it through. We're going to make it through this time. We just need to switch things up and head in a different direction. Because if you don't open up like that, and obviously there's some things you don't share, right? But if you don't open up like that, then people will make up these crazy thoughts in their head, and it'll be even worse.
I'm curious, do you go to the extent of like the Great Game of Business Open or EOS for goal setting? Any of that sound familiar? Or you found your own processes that help you manage these overall goals?
You know, I mean, we bounced around from different things. I'm actually a fan of EOS. It didn't work well for us. It's not because of EOS. I just think we had the wrong implementer. And and sometimes when you have the wrong implementer, it throws a shade on the whole system. And I would like to redo it, and maybe we will. It's just you have to overcome, you know, everybody's last experience with it. So I think we have to be mindful and figure out how to go about implementing something like that. I also think, I know you mentioned to me, you do a lot of work with CEOs, which tend to be a lonely type of position. You know, a lot of times you don't know who to turn to. You don't necessarily want to tell your wife some of this stuff maybe, and definitely not your employees. But having if you're a CEO, or a business owner, and you have a coach or you have a community of people who are experiencing the same type of challenges, is a great way to get some of that off your chest and even do some of this goal setting and ideas that you were talking about.
So where do you go and find other CEOs to talk to? Do you have conferences, events that you go to? I don't know, quarterly places where there's so many different ones out there. I'm just kind of curious if you found one that you enjoy.
I've kind of looked at a couple. When I was actually out in South Carolina, I was my organization is a little small for this organization, but there's the CEO project. I was invited. That's where I was at. I was invited by Dr. Jim Shugmer to go out and participate in it. But if I was a larger business, 100 million or more, that would be a great organization. You know, there's also Vistage. There's a bunch of other ones. I'm not currently in one. I just am fortunate enough to, I have a bunch of friends right now, who are CEOs and, in charge of VCs or whatever. So I could kind of turn to them. So I've been lucky to build up a network of people I can turn to. Also, as a podcast host, I've made some great friends who've been super successful, who I could turn to and build my network that way. So, I think those are great groups. I'm not in one right now, but I've got people I can turn to in my network.
Yeah. It's important to be able to have those resources because you're right. The CEO position.
Are you in one?
I'm trying to think. No, I've bounced around to different ones over the years. Yeah, right now too. I'm not. Yeah. So, I've just had I had higher expectations for a few and didn't, I just needed more than what was out there. So I guess I need to create a combination of them just to keep learning and growing, and definitely a self-learner, read a ton of books, podcasts, stuff like that, but, and just live it. So
just live it. That's the best way to do it. Like we were talking about.
It's kind of scary when you're just kind of living in it. It's not, it's not safe. Like when you're just in a group talking about the what ifs, you actually make the decision and do it. The things change. So, that's cool. I'm always curious to hear what other people are doing to find out what's working for them. And, you had mentioned something earlier in the beginning as far as pulse checks and making sure that retaining and hiring great talent. Do you have any thoughts around that maybe you want to share? How do you retain? Yeah. How do you retain this great talent?
Set them up so they feel like that there's a purpose and that they belong. I think that's very, very important. One of the things, if you, in my little audit that I did, it's something I believe I've been consistent at is being a people first leader. I think that's important. You start by taking care of your people, who will take care of your customers, who will take care of your shareholders if you have them. That's important. Some organizations do stay interviews. You find out why people are staying. I typically, when possible, when we hire people at LearnIt, I look to hire for people with aptitude and attitude over experience, when at all possible, and set up an environment where they feel like it's okay to fail, make mistakes, and that their leaders have their backs. And when you do that, you tend to have a more higher retention. So there's a lot of different things you can do. I think it's important to have a good culture. And in order to have a good culture, I think it starts at the top. You got to model the behavior that you expect of your team. And so those are just some of the ways. And I don't think a performance review should be like every 6 months or anything. I just think it should be something consistent. Just have consistent check-ins and conversations with people to see how they're doing and giving them opportunities for growth. Whether they're 18 months or 18 years, I truly want my team members to feel like when they leave LearnIt, it was a great experience for them, and they're going to take what they learned to their next organization, and then hopefully they're going to refer back their organization back to LearnIt for learning and development needs.
Nice.
Or referrals for other employees. Our best employees we have typically come from alumni who referred them because they know that the LearnIt culture and what we do.
I like it. So if somebody wants to learn more about LearnIt and the work that you're doing, what's the best way to do that? I know you mentioned you had a book as well. Do you mind sharing all that good stuff?
Yeah, I got my book right here, The Learn It All, Learn It All Leader. The best way to connect with me on LinkedIn, LinkedIn at Damon Lemby. LearnIt's website is learnit.com. Say you heard me on the Business Vitality podcast, and I'll I'll send you over a code for a free class and something, I don't know, difficult conversations or coaching or something, and check out the Learn It All podcast. So those are the best ways to connect with me.
That's awesome. Thank you. Damon Limby, you are the CEO of Learn It, found on the web at learnit.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks for listening to the episode. If you like it, please subscribe, share this episode or this show with other people around you. The greatest form of a compliment is a referral. I really appreciate them. And if you think that you want to learn more about some of the work we're doing, I encourage you to reach out to katherinecanty.com. You can schedule a call or just continue to read articles and information that we post out there. Thank you so much for being here.